Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to the Hunter's Quorum, where we, the advisors of the Monster Hunter world, assemble to let you know all about the monsters of the world and whether or not they're kissable. I'm Six Dalmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Alan Ibrahim from Chass and Scanline Media, and I am on a different podcast than I thought I was. This is a kissing show?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready for it. Let's see about which one
Listen, that was your argument for keeping the Kezu, as I recall.
I'm the worst. If that's true, I'm insufferable. That's great.
And we're, you know, here's a secret. We're coming at this. We're like, hey, listen, it's really important that to judge Monster Hunter properly, we bring in a nice outsider perspective, right? We are experts in judging monsters generally, thanks to our time in Pokemon, where we judged every single Pokemon and every form of every Pokemon, which was a lot of work. But then it's like, but now we come into Monster Hunter and we're newcomers, and so we can judge with eyes, you know, wide open and innocent of any previous biases. Here's the thing that makes us ignorant as shit.
Yeah, we're foolish.
And we needed an expert. We needed a guide. Introducing Minovsky. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'm Minovsky, Twitter's own Minovsky article, and I love monsters, so that's why I'm here.
Do you love kissing them?
Again, I also didn't know this was this kind of show.
I mean, listen, we're recording this on Valentine's Day. We just have to pivot.
It's literally untrue. Minovsky, the impetus for getting you on this pod, besides you seeming like a really cool person, was you were posting a good amount about not only Monster Hunter, but specifically about Monster Hunter monsters. And
yes.
It felt like a match made in heaven, honestly.
Yeah, and now I have gone back. After I got the invite, I went back and listened to the episodes up to this point. And I agree. I think this will be a good partnership between two sets of expertises.
Yes, indeed.
I want to give a quick shout out to Scanline co-host Kyrie, our chief outreach officer,
yeah.
who made the hookup. Because specifically the conversation that happened was like, hey, Minofsky's tweeting about Monster Hunter, you should get them on the Hunter's Quorum. And I was like, I should wait till I build up more clout. I'm a nobody.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, I sent the DM.
And I immediately said, sure, that sounds fun. Like, it was literally that easy. Like, I try to make myself very approachable. I do not give a shit about online clout, so like, I just like talking about monsters. Don't think of yourself that way.
I always feel like I'm imposing. You know how if you don't know how it is yourself, I'm sure you know people who are like this.
It's funny.
So.
I want to pull back the curtain a little bit, real quick, and just say that like, you feel like you're imposing, and I'm the one already going, you know, the fourth generation of monsters is there's a lot of monsters there. If you need me to make more than one appearance to cover them, like, I'm willing to do it. So like, I then felt like I was imposing and hijacking the show in some way. So look at us, a bunch of neurotic people that like monsters. Let's go.
Bingo bang. Indeed. That's the slogan for the pod. Minovsky, I want to come out the gate and ask you in general, what's your history with the Monster Hunter franchise?
So I didn't really start Monster Hunter until Monster Hunter, I believe, 4 Ultimate, which a friend had bought me. I got a decent distance in that one, but the friend that I was playing with at the time kind of dropped out, so I didn't get to do a lot of the post-game or like late game content. I should go even further back than this and say that the allure of Monster Hunter for me is manyfold. I have always loved animals. I've always loved monsters and folklore. I've always loved kaiju films. Most of my favorite kinds of games are all encompassed within Monster Hunter. I love JRPGs. I love action games. I love fighting games. And, you know, a lot of the great fighting games were made by Capcom. So I've always loved Capcom games, and I always knew that there was this other Capcom thing that was really hot in Japan that just really hadn't caught on over here yet. But unfortunately, I never owned a PSP or anything like that, so I didn't play a lot of the earlier entries, and I kind of had to wait until they were more available on things like the DS, PlayStation 4, the Switch, things like that. So I have really gotten into Monster Hunter. I would say that the thing that really pulled me in beyond just all those overlapping interests aligning was that I had some really good friends I played with in Monster Hunter World, which I played for hundreds of hours. Shout out to that squad, the Ham Ham squad named after Hamtaro. My friend Tracy, who may listen to this recording, has specifically asked me to defend the honor of one monster that was going to come up on this list later, so I'm going to do that. And also shout out to my other crew, the Long Claw Truckers, who hunted every crab in Generations Ultimate to Extinction. So I have found that from World to Rise, and now I'm kind of going back to the older games. I'm playing Generations Ultimate a lot right now, because I've done everything I can do in Rise until Sunbreak, that I just really became obsessed with the action in these games, but especially the monster designs and the ecology and just everything about that world. So it's a game that I've really immersed myself in a way that I feel that you all have probably done for Pokemon. Like, I played Pokemon Blue, Yellow, you know, but I had some of Gold and Ruby, but I never got much further than that. Monster Hunter was more my level of immersion. I liked the giant, gross-looking things.
You're saying you never downloaded a fan-translated ROM of the TCG card game video game on Game Boy Color.
My brother played that one a lot.
It was pretty cool.
It's so much better than it has any right to be, by the way. It's like a legally based on a card game based on a video game.
I do want to say real quick before we get into Monster Hunter, though, I believe... Okay, so I was looking through the sheet because you...
Oh, no. Here it comes.
So I want to say why... And I'll listen to the episode later. I don't want to take up too much time with this, but Slowpoke and Slowbro being cut, being condemned, I believe, is the phraseology here is to hell. That really wounded me. Those are my guys.
I never know.
I would have to go back and listen to our argument. I'm sure it was very compelling. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I think, like, listen, if I was in the Pokedex and that I was rated on the Quorum, I'd be sent to hell. Listen, a lot of things belong in hell.
Sure. I mean, you also sent another one of my Monster Hunter faves, a Kantor, to hell, but, you know, biologically, he's pretty suited to swimming around in hellish lava, so I wasn't so worried about that one.
He'll be fine.
There's a big question also of redundancies, because our intention was sort of, we sort of bring this approach to Monster Hunter, and whether or not it's the correct approach is up for debate. But with Pokemon, I find it hard not to argue that there are too many fucking Pokemon.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's like fundamentally the premise of the podcast.
Yeah, so fundamentally it's like, listen, we want to, when in doubt, make the list shorter.
Oh, sure. No, and honestly, there's a lot of Monster Hunter monsters too, but I think the problem there is just keeping up with how these games are numbered and sequelized in that very Capcom fashion. So,
yes.
It's a very different set of problems. I think you have wisely skipped most of the variant monsters, even if they're pretty cool looking.
We try to talk about them when they are easily noticeable on the wiki.
Sure.
But we don't want to give them their own entries, just because, unlike with Pokemon, we have enough context and history that we can say something about the variants. Here, we're just going to be like, this one's electric. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily, in this set of monsters that we're going to be talking about for these next couple episodes, I have experience with, I think, almost all of them but one. So
wow.
I think we'll be able to get through this one pretty handily.
I mean, I was building this list, doing my prep work, and I was like, these all seem pretty pretty dope, but
yeah.
Let's not belabor the point. Let's get into our first one. We have two left in Gen 3, and we're starting with what may be the one you haven't seen. The Brachydios.
Oh no, this is a perfect monster to go right out the gate. Like, this is a monster that only Capcom could have designed.
How do you even start to describe the Brachydios?
So, yeah, so what's wrong with him?
What's going on?
So, okay, let's describe the Brachydios. The Brachydios is a boxer dragon. So yep. it stands on its hind legs. It has two fists that it punches things with very aggressively. It has a horn that looks like a pompadour. And it covers its fists and horn in explosive slime so that when it punches something, there will be a delayed explosion after. So it does like Fist of the North Star delayed attacks. So not only are you getting punched by a giant monster, but that giant monster's, where that giant monster's fist hit you will explode a few seconds later.
Does it also do like an ada, 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 like just a million really fast punches and then you realize it afterwards?
One of its variations absolutely does that to the point that like the ground can become molten.
Oh, hell yeah. The Brachydios what's up?
Sorry, I looked at some of the variants.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, hold on.
I knew you were going to like that variant.
No, I don't like
you
it.
You don't
I
like it.
Not.
Okay.
I do
okay.
not
I like,
like
it.
It.
I like it. It's dumb. But we'll get there. Yeah, so it's a punchy hind legs brute wyvern. Also, Minofsky, wyvern or wyvern? This is our endless debate.
I say wyvern.
Okay. I'll never commit to one or the other.
I already called it a dragon erroneously. It is a wyvern. Yes, that is the outside of the elders. That is the Monster Hunter terminology, wyvern.
And it is specifically the crushing wyvern. So slime blight, which was introduced also in third gen. So they have a really good excuse to like have a monster that inflicts slime blight. Big thick guy. Big. I love this back of the head sort of like mane that it has going on. I'm a big fan of that. And it's pretty physically unique. I think another thing we've noticed and what's led to a lot of cuts with the Hunter's Quorum is that sometimes, especially earlier in the franchise, it felt like they had a body, a head, and a tail, and they just kind of swapped those parts out and made a bunch of different monsters. The different ones that look like velociraptors, for example.
Honestly, that's true. A big thing in Monster Hunter is that certain monsters will share the same skeleton. And so that is a way that a lot of Monster Hunter players will speculate on what's going to be in the next game. Like the next update, it's like, oh, well, this monster's skeleton's already in there. So that opens up all these other possibilities. Because the skeleton, I believe, is one of the most expensive design elements for them to develop. So
no doubt.
If the skeletons are available, you can kind of swap some other parts in. But yeah, this one's very unique. There's not anything really built like Brachy.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking that sort of brute wyvern idea of like, what if you had an incredibly thick tail and it was your entire body? But then he also has these big arms and the, yeah, as you say, like the pompadour horn thing, and it's clearly taken to a different direction.
Yes, this one's a very popular monster. He's very beloved. Another thing in its favor is I will say that in the stories games, one of his supers is a like anime/Rocky-style training montage of him practicing boxing and then like unleashing a big attack.
Really,
that's very good.
Yeah, it's also it does Dudley from Street Fighter's corkscrew blow as one of its attacks.
Ooh,
so.
I like that. Does it have a cross counter? Like is there a turf battle where they punch each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. I haven't seen that, but I would say it's very possible. Like they really do emphasize this as a brawler. Like it is a boxer of a monster. Yeah. It's so unique in that way, and I really like this one.
I'm always trying to look at the, like, if they're in stories, I try to see what did they emphasize? What did they decide to make a point of? And, you know, of course you have the horn and the two fists. They also added green to its tongue. It has, like, a green poisonous tongue. Just throwing in color in there as much as you can. Because I think the blue would be really boring.
The tongue is important, too, because over time, as it punches things, the slime on its fists will wear off, and it can lick its hands to reapply them.
Ew!
So it like it reactivates the slime with its saliva.
Get that quote out of context, whoever. Mm-hmm. Oh, gross! That's so good. Yuck, right. Yuck, yuck.
So do you want to talk about that variant that's offending you right now?
We could talk about the easy ones first, right? There's the raging one, mm-hmm. which is sort of like just alternate colors. I think looks cool.
That's right.
It fights a lot harder. That's the one that punches so fast that things become molten. And I also like that they use the phrase raging because I think that's a deliberate raging bull callback.
Mm. Oh, sure. I like it.
Yeah, but I fought that one. It's a very enjoyable, very tough monster.
Mm. Then you get the ice blast, which is like, you know, fire and ice. Is twice as nice. Is that what I say? Is that my line? Line?
Yeah, that's your line.
Sure.
Okay, great. I actually think it looks fairly cool.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that one before, but yeah, it's neat.
I'm looking at the gallery. I mean, it's only available in Explorer, so, you know.
All the coolest ones are in Explorer. You hate to see it.
Explorer is just where they decided there are no rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, for better or for worse.
Well, then that's where they made the Santa Claus monster. Speaking of which.
That's where we got the Unit 1 Brachydos. Mm-hmm. This is a Ava Unit 1 colored Brachydos. This is a crossover with Evangelion.
Yep. In Explorer. This is obscene.
I mean, this is the monster that could most look like an Ava unit, so I see how you'd get here.
Oh, yeah.
It does have the angel halo.
Oh, does it?
Where is it? Yeah, I'm gonna post this in our voice chat channel.
Okay.
So that we can all be looking at the same thing, but yeah, it does.
Oh, wow.
Also, apparently, in-game. Does the turn red and rage thing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, hunching over, and it has the colors and everything. Like, yeah, this you're right, Manofsky. This fits, like, the unit.
Oh, god damn it. Okay, I figured out what that is.
What's going on?
Manofsky, you're going to have to tell me if any other monster in Monster Hunter does this, because to me, this sounds miraculous and terrible.
Okay.
So you fight the unit 01 Brachydos, and it looks like, you know, the green and purple friend there, right? Mm-hmm. And you kill it, and you da 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 da, right? Yeah. Falls down.
Mm-hmm.
And then it roars, turns red, and stands back up at its round two.
So I will tell you that there was a monster in the first game that does a less ambitious version of this trick, and that was the rubber bird Gypsyros.
Excuse me.
So Gypsyros, which you can also still fight in Generations Ultimate, you've talked about that one. It had poison. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It could flash. It had rubbery skin that, like, blunt weapons bounced off of. It's an over-designed Goonie mess, and I kind of love it for that. But one of its other tricks was that it would play dead. And it would wait for you to come over to, like, carve it. Like, the music would stop and everything.
Yeah.
And then it would just get back up and hit you. Like, it would just wait for you to come in and then just... So yeah, I mean, it's so much less ambitious, but that is not the first time something has played dead and then popped back up.
Well, it's funny because the implication is it actually dies. It's not playing dead. It dies.
And that's pretty awesome.
Goes angel mode.
That's pretty awesome.
See,
and you thought you were going to hate this variation.
I did.
They
really
took
did.
The idea all the way to the end.
All right. Well, let's look at some equipment as we do. So here's a question for you. You've heard our methods. What do you think of us making such a big deal out of the equipment? Do you think that's misguided or?
Oh no, I think that's very important. The quests for armor and for weapons and things that suit your personality and how you want to play the game, and also just fashion hunting, are extremely important to Monster Hunter. I mean, I think that's a reason that World and, well, you know, Generations Ultimate, World and Rise all have versions of, like, oh, in the later game, you can wear one set of armor for the skills, and then you can put another set of armor over it just for cosmetic reasons. Mm-hmm. So
they know.
Like, yeah, they know. So I think that's a very important part of the methodology. I will say, you know, because the wiki is holding this back from you, I wish the wiki emphasized also what equipment the cats get for each monster. Because I think that's a huge part of the appeal that's missed on the wiki, regrettably.
The Palico armor is a big deciding factor. In Rise, I loved getting good Palico armor. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. Like, but right now, with what you have to work with in front of you, which is the, you know, the somewhat imperfect wiki, I'd say focusing on the equipment, you know, the weapons, the armor, I think that's a very important part of the decision making. So I'm with you on that.
And you did, you know, I don't, like what you say, you said before the podcast, like, listen, you know, wikis are a lot of damn work.
Are a lot of work.
Nobody blames them for not having it, you know, be absolutely 100% complete.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do this. You're not trying to do this. Somebody did try to do this, and, you know, they did a very good job, but there are just, for some of these monsters we'll get to later, I think there are some missing elements. So we'll get into that.
But not so much for the Brachydos here. I'm seeing some very good shit. It's like, I love the Monster Hunter Online longsword, where it doesn't have a hilt. It just sort of bends a little bit to keep your hand safe, and then it's just this black blade covered in green goo.
Yeah.
I hope it explodes too.
All of the Brachy's weapons usually have blast elements, so they're meant to trigger some explosions. But yeah, I always love how much the Brachy gear emphasizes the slime, because that was the unique thing about Brachy at first, was just it was the only one that did the blast element at first. So it's very important.
One thing that doesn't emphasize the slime is the hunting horn, which is just an electric guitar.
Yeah.
It's a cool one.
Yeah, I was a hunting horn main in World, and I always loved when the weapon was just a guitar. Zenogre had a guitar, too, and usually they'll play, like, some... When you play the song, it'll do some version of that monster's theme song for the tune.
Oh, that's
so
good.
I always liked that.
How... As a person who has had trouble... Like, I like the longsword, but I feel like... I feel bad liking the longsword, and so I feel like I should switch...
I mean, if you're playing Rise, the longsword is the best weapon in the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
By a pretty, like, broken margin at this point, so I don't think you should feel bad about that at all.
It makes me feel like I should, like, add 3 more X's to my username and switch my portrait to Sephiroth. I feel like a dipshit.
I think, what was it? I don't remember the exact figure, but I want to say it was almost, like, almost half or possibly more players were using longsword right now.
Wow.
Like
Exactly.
Like
it's like maining Ryu in Street Fighter. You're like, yeah,
sure.
I get it.
But like, but you know what? Sometimes you want to main Ryu. Like,
true.
So, I don't look down on anybody for using longsword. I don't think you should. But like, if you have enough materials and you want to try a different weapon, like, branch out a little bit. That's what I've done. Like, I started as a hunting horn player. Now I've also learned lance and gun lance and. Gosh, what is the other one? Insect glaive. So,
nice.
Rise seems pretty cool.
Rise gives materials at like a much greater level, so it's a lot easier to forge things. So, if there's anything you're interested in, just make it and see if the playstyle gels with you. But longsword is really cool, and it's really it's like the coolest it's ever been in Rise. So, I don't blame you for using it.
Though I do confirm this for me, the bow is just boring as shit, right?
I can't say that. The bow is good and it's impressive, and like it's just that I personally can't wrap my head around the like the ammo and coating other aspects of the long range weapons. But some of my friends who play are very, very, very I would use the phrase godly. Yeah, like pro bow and pro like heavy bow gun and stuff. I've just seen them do incredible things. It's just not something I can do.
It's a different play style. I mean, I started maining sword and shield when I played 4 Ultimate back in the day, 6 years ago. And now I play Switch Axe entirely because I wanted something more complicated, but I also just feel in my mind like Monster Hunters are about swinging big things at big monsters. And
oh,
the
sure.
bow goes like against that. But I have a good friend who's a bow main, and he just is playing a different type of game. It's all about range and aiming and all that stuff, and he loves it. So, like, I respect that. I think bow has a place in the Monster Hunter canon, but it's different. It's very different.
But I agree. The heavy impact of big weapons is so satisfying in Monster Hunter. I mean, that's why Greatsword is, you know, more or less the icon of Monster Hunter.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I also like the crunch of, you know, hitting things with big weapons.
Mm-hmm. But I was overall, going to say,
a lot of this. Sorry, go ahead.
Just about the weapons, if we're going to talk about the Brachydeus weapons more. Six and I both had a large part of our lives consumed by World of Warcraft. And so when I see the green and the reds, I think of Illidan from World of Warcraft. And I just think these are his glaives. Like the greatsword just looks like the dual blades.
It looks like it's got fel energy. Yeah.
Exactly. It looks like these were all dipped in fel energy. But I do like that aesthetic. I think green weapons are great. And some of them have red variants too, which is really fun. There's a four ultimate one called the Lightbreak Blade, which is just like lava erupting from a greatsword. And that is, that's fantastic to me. And some of the sword and shields even look like a Samus Aran morph ball, which is really cool. So I think overall, the Brachydeus does deliver with the weaponry at the very least.
Okay, so I'm hopping to armor real quick, and I'm going to say I have never seen the three ultimate / four ultimate female Brachy armor for Gunner before, and I'm realizing it has like robot Hatsune Miku hair.
Oh my god, it totally does.
It does have... It's armored PSO2 twin tails.
It looks like Fei Yin from Virtua On or something. It's wild.
And the Frontier
there's
G,
a lot there.
Frontier G Gunner female has a similar thing. Honestly, yeah. And then even in online, the Gunner female has that. That's so they become like bunny ears at that point. That's very silly.
And then you get to Worlds more kind of serious designs, and it's not quite the same.
Not having as much fun with it.
No. That's honestly going to be an issue, I think, when you get to a lot of the world originals. World equipment, mainly. Like that was a big criticism of World, is that they kind of nailed every other aspect, but the equipment, it's a little more drab in comparison.
But we have had, like a queen, an armored queen's gown with a crown in World before.
Oh, there sure, some sick sure. Shit. I mean, there are some sick things. You'll get to that.
okay, fair enough.
I was going to briefly ask you, Minoski, just your take on this, because I've this year been trying to get, because of this podcast, trying to get two of my other friends into Monster Hunter, and I started them just before Rise came out on PC, so we've been playing World on PC. And sure. I'm wondering what you think about World versus Rise as somebody's first Monster Hunter game, especially as their first co-op Monster Hunter experience.
I mean, that's tough for me because, you know, as I said, like, playing World with friends is really, really what pulled me in. But I think they're very different in a lot of ways. I mean, there's different quality of life changes between the two. I think that if you haven't... Some of the stuff in Rise frustrates, like, older generation players, because I would say that, like, as far as combat and everything else goes, at least before Sunbreak shows up and we get, you know, Master / G-Rank monsters and, like, it hasn't been as challenging, but I also think it's been, like, the flow of combat and movement in Rise is really fun, whereas I think that World really emphasizes a bit more of what older Monster Hunter is still, which is there's lots of preparation involved. There's lots of little survival things that you have to do that Rise doesn't really focus on. Rise wants you to get to the combat again as quickly as possible. Like, it's a more arcadey game, I think. That's a tough one for me to answer because I have played both with different sets of friends and had a great time. So really, I think if you're trying to get your friends into it, it's just which one speaks to them more. World really sold me. Like I was really impressed with the huge environments. I was really impressed with, you know, the graphics and everything, but I'm also someone that thinks the graphics in Rise are great too. So for what they're trying to do, I mean, they're also both made by different teams. So I suspect whatever's coming after Sunbreak will kind of be the World sequel. That'll be a bit more of that style.
Yeah.
And they'll alternate every generation. But as far as getting your friends to do it, yeah, it's just whatever gets them to come back and play another round, that's the one you want to go for.
I think the main issue we've been having is trying to do the single player together because it feels like the game actively does not want you to do the single player missions with your friends.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that is maybe one of the worst things about World is you have to watch the cutscenes before your friends can join.
It's not even... But you can all separately watch the cutscenes, but then one of you has to like do a flare so that everyone else can come, and then sometimes you don't all get the finishing credit. It feels like it's actively, like I said, it doesn't want you to play those missions with people. But
World was kind of an awkward transition, because before, in the older games, to do those kind of missions, like, people couldn't just join in at any time. Like, you had to meet together in a hunter's hub that was just for players, and you'd have, like, you'd make arrangements, or, like, someone would have an open lobby and you'd hop in. World was the first time they really tried the, like, shoot a flare into the air and anybody can show up and help you, which in some ways I think is great. But I think Rise is much faster about those things and just letting your friends hop on. So yeah, I would say that especially the first time you fight a monster in single player, it's very frustrating because there are specific periods that won't let anybody join until you've seen the mid mission cutscene or something. So your friends are just waiting around for you. Later in the game, it's not going to be an issue because there's not going to be really cutscenes or anything, but
right after the first rank or whatever. Yeah. I was just curious because it was like a week later Rise came out, and I was like, damn, that one had... I remember, because I played a lot of Rise with Six and Company, and I was like, oh, well, I remember that one had entire... One section of the game was dedicated to this is where you do multiplayer stuff, and you can do all of it with your friends. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's better, but in some ways, it's like, I don't want to just do that. But anyways, neither here nor there. I just wanted your take on...
Oh, sure. No, I think they're both great, and I think they both excel at different areas, so... Yeah, it's just whichever one you're in the mood for at the moment. But that aspect of it is very frustrating.
But the first time I went back, because I played Rise first, and when I went back to World and it said you have to track monsters, I was like, damn it, this is so cool. I like tracking monsters. That feels like part of the experience. I don't like just being like, boop, here's the map, go kill it. Like, here's the thing. So that's something I actually wish they bring back.
I would like more of that, too.
It's nice. But the Brachydios...
We're not going to get very far today. We're doing a lot of establishing groundwork of the dynamic.
Sorry, we had to really work. Yeah, good. It's a 101.
this is good shit. And also, next time we'll have fewer questions.
Yes.
I think the Brachydios' equipment, I'm not like blown away by, I think specifically the armor, I do like the twin tails, but otherwise I don't know that it does a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I mean, I think the weapons are really cool, so I'd give it a yes on this and a definite keep overall.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the Palico armor being a deciding factor, and I just put in the chat the Brachydios Palico armor, which has the pompadour and the fist, and that's just incredible.
Fist is gigantic. He's just got a red Hadouken on his fist.
I also want to point out that the Palico armor is shaped like a boxer's robe, so it's open in the middle. Popped collar, and it's got boxer shorts.
Really good.
That's very good. I might have to add a Palico column, and we might have to do more work.
Do a lot of work, yeah.
Yeah, so some will, some won't, but where you can get it, yeah. I think it's worth looking at.
Well, I guess it's on to our next monster, the last monster of Generation 3, the Dire Morales.
Now, this is the one I've never fought because it hasn't come back since Generation 3.
I see. Is it because people hated it?
No, it's definitely one of those ones where it's part of like the legendary Black Dragon class with Fatalis and...
Oh, sure. Were there like a billion of these?
I mean, it's just those are always considered really suitable in-game challenges. So I remember you fight the cool thing about this one is that you fight it on a seashore. So it's and three had the underwater combat. So parts of the fight were on land, parts were underwater. I mean, to describe it, it's a living like thermal vent dragon.
Super cool.
Yeah, it looks pretty sick.
Yeah, it's very cool looking.
It's a bunch of it has a long like fairly thin tail. Coming into sort of a classical dragon body and posture, but like with the head sort of snaking up and curling over. But it has a bunch of like rocks of varying size along the whole length of the back, small ones along the tail, getting bigger. The back has some gigantic ones, and then some sort of medium sized ones along the back of the neck. It's sort of like black, like charred rock with molten lava peeking through. Yeah,
its wings are like cannons, which is beautiful.
And you only fight it just by existing. This thing boiled and poisoned the sea. So you fight it in the tainted sea. Like, it's killed everything else just by being there.
You start to understand why perhaps people wanted it gone.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the... So you haven't fought this thing.
I have not. I've seen a videos, but I have not fought.
I'm looking at the gallery, and there's a shot that appears to be of someone pointing an anti-aircraft turret at it.
That sounds reasonable, sure.
Wait, oh yeah, okay. What? No, that's not anti. That's a ballista.
It is. It just has a very like high-tech looking reticle in M3U, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's just low, like, the textures are just low enough resolution, which, you know, it happens. Listen, you know, it's a consoles, Wii game. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, so you turned it away from the U-boat, so now you're shooting at this.
Or it's like the secret ending of, not Danganronpa, Drakengard 1. He gave me the fighter plane fighting dragons.
They would not have succeeded at shooting this thing down, I think.
No. I love how conceptual this one is. I always love the ones that like leave the realm of realism, having cannons for wings, looking like it is part of the lava is really awesome. Mm-hmm. I love everything about this guy. But it's something like we've been saying, you can't imagine this one like having a habitat. Its literal description is something like, some legends consider this great dragon to be the devil fated to destroy the world, while others claim it is the giant who birthed creation. And it's like, meanwhile, the Fatalis is just like, hey guys, I'm a big dragon.
Okay.
He's existed in the same game.
I have to give Fatalis some credit, okay, because I know that one got cut early for being just a dragon. I'm going to tell you two really cool things about Fatalis, though.
Please, yeah.
Okay.
That the wiki maybe didn't encourage. One, Fatalis despises humanity to a certain point where it is said to, like, fuse dead hunters' armors to its body to reinforce its skin. And one of its attacks in world, it grabs you and tries to superheat, and it's trying to fuse you to it alive, which is a really cool attack.
Cool.
And the other thing is there is like a mythology around its armor and equipment where it is said that the hunters that wear the Fatalis armor too long might themselves one day disappear and become a Fatalis. Like, it might regenerate through its own armor.
Oh.
Like, so it's got some cool mythology. That doesn't, like, if you just see it as like, oh yeah, it's the big dragon, doesn't come through. But yeah, this is another one of those like black dragon legends where, again, you're right, you can't see it existing anywhere. And I mean, and that you know, in this case, that is the story. It can't exist here or it's going to just kill the ocean.
I guess I don't think we pointed out at the time, but just quickly glancing at it, the light bow gun for the Fatalis is just a parasol, and that's pretty incredible.
See, I'm not trying to sway things too much, but I do want to. There are certain monsters in the future that I might have to play like Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney for. Yep, exactly. But Dire Morales, I don't have the experience with other than just saying that a volcano dragon is pretty cool.
I agree. It has some amazing equipment, I do have to say, just from peeking. Especially, like, we never talk about these because they're not usually interesting, but the names of the weapons, like the hunting horn being called the Apocalypso, or the gun lance
cool.
being called
That's a little try-hard.
They all are like that. The dual blades are called the Fistolution. What? The great sword's called the Depotheosis. These are so... Some translator had a great time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think this is the point, too, where we start seeing, like, yeah, the localizers having fun with it.
The heavy bowgun, the Hexclamation. So I'll stop reading these, but they're really good. And they look
great. They're really good. They look great. The problem is, with the armor, they clearly didn't have enough polygons.
Well, I believe this one premiered on 3DS, so...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not faulting them. It just seems like this looks like a armor set where they probably had bigger visions than this. Like, one of these sets looked like it's supposed to like transform into a plane, but only goes halfway there because, again, they had technical limitations. I think
I do like that the center of all of them emphasizes the magma core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tony Stark looking ass.
Yeah, it's very Iron Man.
Yeah, you can tell that those look like if they had hot, if I saw that in Rise or in World especially, they would look amazing. But they didn't make this game. This guy didn't make it into yeah. those games. But man, yeah. those would look good. I would almost argue yeah. that this is a tentative keep. Well, it's a keep for I think for sure, but on the promise of like, please bring this into the modern age.
Well, the thing about the Black Dragons and like the in-game monsters is typically they'll be the last updates of the new games. So if they come back, it'll be one of the last things you fight in Sunbreak or you know whatever's coming next.
That makes sense. I mean, you know, you don't want it like you don't want the Dire Morales to be like you know a rank 7 filler monster. That doesn't feel good.
No, you've got to make them big and epic every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, that's it for Generation 3. We still have some time left, so I would love to go into like you know. Okay, listen. Let's do the twofer that was originally going to be one fer, but you said we had to do two entries.
You do.
This is a Magala big one. Ones. So we're starting off with the Gore Magala, which is our first, I believe, ?? Type monster.
Yes, this is the flagship monster. This is the flagship monster of 4, and learning more about what the Gore Magala was a huge part of the 4 story. So yeah, it was completely unknown at the time. To describe it, it looks like an H.R. Giger drawing.
Yeah.
In the art books, they refer to it as something they were trying to do with, like, they wanted to do, like, a dark fantasy dragon. But I think it almost looks like a xenomorph.
Xenomorph is really accurate. That's really accurate. Yes.
Yeah, it's very Gigerish. It looks very much something like Kentaro Miura from Berserk might have drawn.
Mm-hmm. Finally on board. Yes, yeah. I think I see that.
Now, in motion, this thing is beautiful. Something I love about Gore Magala's design is that it has 6 legs. Two of the legs have wings, but unless it's in like a really enraged state, those two arms will clasp to its shoulder and will hang like a cape. So as it's moving around, it's kind of got this like fluttering, ragged cloak that you later realize are wings when it's angry at you.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm looking at some GIFs, and yeah, this is cool looking in motion.
Other cool things about Gore Magala. Gore Magala is blind.
Yeah.
It's also in its larval stage. So like what you're seeing is kind of like the cocoon. Gore Magala senses its surroundings by letting out these hairs and spores, which trigger something in everything around it called the frenzy virus. So in ways, this is kind of Capcom doing a Resident Evil dragon, because any other monster or living thing that comes into contact with the spores it's using to sense its environment, like, gets kind of a monster super rabies that drives them mad until they destroy everything in sight and burn out.
Did you play enough of 4 to encounter the Gore Magala in combat?
I didn't play any 4.
Oh, you didn't play. Yeah, this is a wild one. Because if I remember correctly, the Frenzy Virus, like, it was like a Berserk sort of thing where you had to have, like, bonus damage, I thought? But then it would, like, decrease your health?
Yeah, so as a hunter, you could get infected with it. And the game, it was a mechanic where the game would reward you if you were especially aggressive. Like, if you could do enough damage to the monster, it instead of harming you, you would overcome it and it would buff your attacks for the rest of the hunt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you couldn't, then you couldn't heal and it would make you weaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it really rewarded, like, playing to the frenzy idea and aspect. It's just an incredible looking monster. Another thing I love about this monster, too, is that when it gets into an enraged state, these two things that look like horns come out, but they're actually antenna, which it uses to sense. And then when those antenna come out, it releases so many of its spores that the sky turns dark. So like it blocks out the sun. It's very cool. And you could snap them off and then it'll go back down. But like it uses those to sense heat and other things. It's just, oh god, it's a, such a cool monster. This is my friend Tracy who helped get me into the game. This is her favorite monster. This is the one that she was like, defend at all costs, but I really don't think I'm gonna need to.
Why is it so mad?
Because it is trying to survive long enough to get to its next form.
I mean, like, Metapod's chill as shit. What's this guy's problem?
Well, he is the edgelord monster. he's in his awkward teen phase, and he's really mad about it. I want to draw your attention also to the variant. God, I didn't even realize it also had a...
I know, another Ava variant.
I didn't realize that one. But the chaotic Gormagala is really cool because... only one of the Gormagalas is able to get to the next stage, Shigaru Magala, and it will then release spores that suppress all of the other Magalas around it from reaching that stage. So they'll imperfectly molt, and so you'll sometimes come across a chaotic Gormagala, which is a Gormagala that is like in constant pain and going mad because it can never finish its molting. So like parts of it are Shigaru Magala and parts of it are Gore. And even the theme song is like a mashup of the two theme songs.
Huh. Whoa.
Like they really, really put a lot of work into this monster. It's one of their coolest ideas, I think.
I mean, it's the flagship one of that game, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's one people have been dying to come back.
I mean, that me included. The mountain that you have to climb, the map that it's on to get to it, is awesome. And you get to the top of Heaven's Mount, and the music goes, and the sky goes dark. It's like there are plenty of good final boss fights. We literally just talked about a great final boss, but the Gormagala for the section of the game that it is the final boss for is a freaking champ. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're gonna keep the Gormagala, but I want to keep, you know, looking at stuff. I want to look at some weapons. I want to look at some other equipment, you know.
Well, right off the bat, look at that greatsword, which kind of looks like the Soul Calibur blade.
You know what it looks like to me? I'm sorry, we're doing this again, but this is absolutely a drop from like the second boss of Noxramas. And WoW.
Yeah, it is.
this is a classic like WoW undead. Like epic drop.
I mean, putting a skeleton in your sword is just a cool thing. You can't tell me that's otherwise.
The hammer also has a giant skull.
Oh, I had this hammer. I had this hammer for hours because I played a lot of hammer. I'm suddenly like being brought back to MH4. This hunting horn is fascinating. What is what's going on with the hunting horn?
Yeah, I have never used that hunting horn before. So
I love the chattering little. The skeleton teeth at the bottom of it, but of it.
Yeah. It looks like a skull that's kind of strapped in.
Light bowgun and heavy bowgun both are. This is like a heavy metal album cover you're getting into now. This is so good. A beautiful sword and shield. The shield doesn't look very protective. It's kind of like two tentacles with an orb in between them. But the sword is really great with the purple.
Mm-hmm.
Purple's
the
one of my favorite colors.
Pretty cool too.
Oh, let's see this armor. Yeah, what do we got? Ooh!
Oh, look at the tattery cape. Look at this like fucking like Final Fantasy Dissidia character. This is great.
I also think this might be the armor you use if you're trying to cosplay Berserk while playing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I can see that. I also like the female gunner armor where you're just the bug queen. That's also cool.
The Rita Repulsa looking ass. Oh yeah, all of the female armor is great as well, the ones that are masked and unmasked.
This is kind of just all great.
Yeah, this is I think one that received a lot of love and care from them, and with Sunbreak looking like it's going to be a sort of dark European fantasy expansion, I'm kind of hoping we see something like Gore again.
Well, I mean, what's going to trigger the Sunbreak is, you know, the sun's going to get blocked out by a lot of spores, right?
It could be.
Well, yeah, I think people would say it's unoriginal if they literally did the Gormagala, but I would like that. And yeah, I think they'll do something similar, but not exactly the same.
I don't know that anyone comes to Monster Hunter for like what's the narrative? What's the like innovative new narrative conceit?
I just mean more like... that they just, it's in this game. Like, people are going to say, why would you put an expansion and then just bring back old monsters?
People are going to want a new monster to be the cause, but if you also throw a Gore in there in the darkness, like, all
yeah,
about
me too. the female Blademaster armor has these shoulder pads that look like claws gripping onto you. And I'm just a big fan of that. I want shoulder armor like that in my real life.
That's another thing that feels very Giger to me.
Yeah. They're not super protective, obviously. But
if you're fat, but if you're fashion hunting, that's definitely
that's
up
perfect.
There.
And the horns. You can be like a demon girl kind of thing, which I'm always a fan of. This is great. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to know, you know, listen, clearly you can be my devil. Can you be my angle? Let's talk about the Shigaru Magala.
Yeah, Shigaru Magala is the light side of Gore Magala. It is the final form. You get to see the one you've been fighting molt into this. And something I really love about Shigaru Magala is the cutscene that plays before you fight one for the first time, which is that, like, it walks up to your hunter and it, like, looks you straight in the eye. And there's, like, this glimmer of recognition. Also because the feelers become horns and it finally has eyes. But, like, it appears to recognize you. There's something about the way it carries itself that feels, like, more than most monsters, that it recognizes you and the stuff you put it through when it was Gore Magala.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like that, you're saying. It's not a big fan.
Yeah. So it feels like a proper duel when you get to fight this thing. You're also fighting it in the rain and like at nighttime on a cliff. It's just a really cool place. The other thing about this one is, as I said with the chaotic Gore Magala, it still does the spores, but its spores change and include parasites that will infect other things and gradually turn them into hosts for other Gore Magala, because it asexually reproduces. So you have to kill this thing or it's going to kind of parasitize the world. It has this very heavenly holy vibe when it, like, it'll do these moves where it rises up and just, like, glows with this glorious light. And again, when the wings are folded, they flap like a cape. It's just a pair of great, cool-looking monsters. And I really do like that whichever Gore becomes Shigaru first deliberately releases spores to keep any other Gore from achieving its glory for that generation.
That's really incredible.
That feels like a cool ecology thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always want to, like, dig more into that stuff with the Monster Hunter games and, like, how the monsters interact with each other and with other members of their species. I do highly recommend people look up this fight because, like you were saying, Natsuki, the cutscene before is incredible. And just seeing its, like, wings vibrate in the rain or whatever is a sight to behold. It gives me kaiju vibes when it's in the air flapping the wings. Which does remind me, we missed a variant for the Gore Magala. I'm sure you skipped on purpose.
I did.
We are going right back because Monster Hunter Explore had another Evangelion crossover with the 10th Angel Gore Magala, which is just the 10th Angel from Eva, exactly.
It's the 2.0 version. It was a movie tie-in.
Is that allowed? I don't think that's allowed. It doesn't even look like a Gore Magala anymore. Like, it's got the wings, I guess, yes, but...
And it's pissed off, you know.
Yeah, but I'm pissed all the time. You don't see me getting fucking awards.
No, you're not, Alan. You're bluffing.
Yeah, you're right. I lied. Sorry, I just wanted to shout that.
I no longer want power. I'm baby.
I wish to secede power. Thank you.
But yeah, there's something about Shigaru Magala that I just adore about the design. And I think part of it is that it does have kaiju wings, but it also, like, when you see it fully in flight, it kind of looks like a biblical, it looks kind of biblical. It's it's a very appropriate in-game monster. Like, there's an awe factor to it that,
there's a piece of artwork they use of it from, Monster Hunter Spirits 2, which really leans into it. It's very much that, like, as you say, like, that biblical style of angel where it's just, like, six wings with spores looking like feathers glittering down.
Yes. Yes.
And you feel, I think, appropriately fucked looking at that.
Absolutely. I will also say that appropriately fucked is fun, too, just because in the fight there is a giant boulder that's in the middle of the stage that a lot of hunters have made memes out of now, because you would, whenever you try to run away from the thing, you try to hide behind the boulder and heal and stuff, and then you, a lot of hunters realize very quickly, like, oh, it's just going to destroy the boulder, and now I've got nowhere to hide. Like, so, just a great fight.
It makes me kind of want, like, I don't know, like, fake out DLC or add-ons for Monster Hunter Stories 2, where you're like, oh, I hatched a new egg. It's a Gormagal. And someone runs up and is like, nope.
We're not doing this. We're getting rid of it. Lava. Like, no, not again.
We are not doing this.
Yeah, you're going to really end the world with this one. That's... But yeah, so cool.
I read something on the wiki that said that Magala is a term from Arabic that means incarnate. I cannot confirm that, because neither Google Translate nor my mediocre, semi-fluent Arabic can confirm that. But
you mean, Alan, I hear you talking Arabic to your family all the time. You mean to tell me that, like, you aren't having weekly conversations about incarnates?
Evil incarnate, good incarnate. Yeah, it doesn't exactly come up in my regular conversational Arabic, that's for sure.
About Rise of Incarnates, the 2v2 fighting game that from Bandai Namco in 2015, that was like, what if Gundam, like, maxi boost, but with just random people we made dudes instead of Mecha?
Yeah, that's what we thought.
Jedrick about. Tyler.
Stop. Are you Googling, or do you have a brain with a memory?
I have. Well, at this point, I'm referring to a wiki.
Rise of the Incarnates is a name I haven't heard in 100 years. Like, this is...
Yeah, yeah.
Brad Burl of the Were Legion.
People play. Say Monster Hunter names are silly.
Oh, one of the player characters, Gordon Matthew Sanders, the President of the United States.
Oh, that's... Yeah. The Shigar Magala is the president of the Monster Hunter world and the president of my heart. I love this.
I feel like he's not, because, you know, because of the Magala problem, right? Magala, I hope you don't take this as an insult, but the Magala has a bit of the Ebola problem where it existing kills everyone. So it's not allowed to reign for very long.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, and honestly, it's very funny, like, this is the only monster I hear old school fans talk about in context of, like, well, story-wise, it would be really hard to bring back, because you'd have to make the game about the Frenzy virus again, and would they ever do that? Like, but, you know, that's why it can appear in the Generations games, because those don't really have a story, they're just anniversary games, where it's like, chuck a ton of monsters from all the eras in, but, yeah, no, you're right, it cannot reign for long, it has to be killed, or... kill everything. It's the thing.
Well, okay, here's what you do, right? During the opening cutscene of Sunrise, right? Have someone say, Sunbreak. You have, like, your handler be like, ever since we gave everyone and all the creatures the Magala vaccine, life has been good.
Oh, God.
But do they really want to be so topical right now?
Yeah. You're like, I come to Monster Hunter to never think about the world.
And you're like, wait, then how are we ever going to fight a Magala? And then there's one character who's an anti-vaxxer, and you're like, oh no, they're going to turn into a Magala.
You finished the armor set, and it's a face mask. Come on, these shows are bad. Protects from the Magala virus. ..
If you get Frenzy, you're gonna need to use some antibacterial gel.
I hate this. I saw a YouTube comment recently that was like, there was a joke in the video about COVID, and the comment said, for people watching this in 10 years, there is a pandemic that we all made jokes about. And I was like, oh God, nothing ages. Nothing ages.
We're all just tired now.
Here's something fun. All of the Shigaru Magala weapons are French words. Speaking of fun languages.
Oh, yeah. I didn't look. We were going to look at equipment. Then I didn't do
that.
And
they're all very, again, they're very angelic looking. I like these colors. Yeah.
But also very evocative of, like, you can see that they are derived from the designs of the Gormagala as well.
Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at, I can't see you from this angle. Is the hammer a bloody eyeball?
Yeah.
Yeah, the hammer appears to be a bloody
orb
eyeball,
of some sort. Clutched. Yeah, yeah. It's,
you
got to
ponder your orb to use that one.
That's, yes.
Legide, which I believe is the Aegis. La Guillotine, the switch axe. Okay, that's really good. You know,
La
what?
Guillotine.
That's really good.
Now, the armor, unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of reference here, but what we do have makes it look like what if the Holy Roman Empire made armor out of a dragon?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I probably am going to get some messages from people who are historians of the Holy Roman Empire being like, you realize they weren't just a bunch of popes. Well, listen.
You sure? Prove it. Were you there?
But, yeah, it's just this, like whites and golds and yellows and blues and very, yeah.
There's a very Warrior of Light vibe from these.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
I like Diablo it. 3 I
especially
Act 4
especially
vibes.
With that first one.
Diablo
once
3
you go to like the once you go to like the like picture 2 of 3 where they're wearing like, you know, face cowls and stuff, I think it slips away a little bit.
Yeah.
But. Sorry.
Oh. Well, there's your face mask.
Oh god, help. I was just going to say, I imagine somebody who doesn't know about religion or history at all, and they see this, and they're like, wow, they totally just copied Diablo 3 Act 4. Shameless ripoff. What is this, Heaven's Edge from Diablo? Sorry.
Getting some big Boss Baby vibes from this armor.
Yeah, it's the only movie I've ever seen. The light bow gun's got spikes on it. I like spiky heavenly stuff. That's a good combo. It's very angel or devil.
Yeah.
Like the bow, which has like dark Gore Magala stuff and Shigaru Magala stuff on it. They just won't make this again. They can never make this again. And for that reason, it has to be kept because it's the only one of its kind. It's too unique.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame.
I would love to fight a Shigaru Magala in a current or next gen Monster Hunter, though. And I think because World brought in so many more people than have ever played Monster Hunter before, and Rise is continuing that trend, I do think that one day we will see it in some form or fashion, even if it's like a one showed up, kill it real quick, like in-game mission or something.
I mean, I feel like if you're going to do it, the thing you have to do, maybe this is the harder, you know, the G-rank version of the spider, whatever, is like a Shigaru Magala is having like a turf war with another monster, and you have to kill the Shigaru Magala before it finishes converting the other one, and it's a two-on-one.
It could be.
There's some great possibilities. Some good monsters. Did not make a lot of progress today.
We talked about some really heavy monsters this one.
That's true.
The next, like the next several are a very eclectic, fun bunch. I think it'll be a very different vibe.
Also, we won't have basic questions about like what makes Monster Hunter good.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take those on and off the air. So anytime.
Appreciate that. I just know that some people listening to this want to get into Monster Hunter also. Mm-hmm. So I figure I can help alleviate that besides me just being like, I don't know, play one of the new ones. They're all good.
They are. I like I said, I've been playing 4 Ultimate lately and I'm having a great time of it. It's a different experience. Like something I've had to get used to again is unlike World and Rise, where the whole map is sort of seamlessly available to you, those are sectioned off into loading screens. So it's very funny to get hit by a monster so hard that it knocks you into like a loading screen. It happens so often in like 4 in Generations Ultimate and stuff. It's very funny.
Yeah, I got a lot of that back on Freedom. That was pretty classic.
Getting to this gen though is exciting for me too, because this was my first Monster Hunter, so I'm seeing like we have like the Ketcha Watcha coming up, and I'm like, oh my god, the Ketcha! Like, I feel like I'm in college again playing Monster Hunter with my friends.
These are the ones that you're gonna start feeling nostalgia for, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm really excited to talk about these.
I feel nostalgia for like the Velocidrome and stuff, because back then I was playing, as I was saying, I was playing like Monster Hunter Freedom on my PSP. And you would fight the first, like, 3 monsters and then be like, okay, you need to grind for ore for 3 hours to have enough equipment to reasonably take on the next monster. I was like, okay, well,
progress
is
way
that's
slower.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Quality of life changes, everybody.
Indeed. So, Minoski, why don't you, you know, thank you so much for being on the show, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm sure it came through, I really love talking about monsters. So I was delighted to be approached, and I think this is the first games-related podcast I've ever done, too. So,
wow. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on here, and you know, maybe we'll have you on other things. How do you feel about Dota 2?
Oh, God, get out while you can.
Well, that can be one I can come on with total ignorance about, because I know nothing about Dota.
Great news. Our Dota 2 podcast is not about Dota 2 anymore. It's mostly about fast food.
Well, I do know something about that, so.
Yeah, excellent. But where can people find you and your work on the internet? The things you do. The way you do the things you do.
You can find me on Twitter at Minovsky Article. At this point, I don't really use that account for any kind of hustle or anything. So you can go on there and you can see me talk about a monster or a cool bug I saw or a bird I'm thinking about or, you know, a movie I liked. I don't know. I just try to keep it very relaxed and loose and just whatever is keeping me motivated and excited to get through that day. So, yeah, you can find me there. Otherwise, I'm just kind of doing, I'm kind of drifting around and doing guest spots on people's podcasts and just trying to, you know, find enjoyment in anything, everything. I don't know. I'm really bad at selling myself right now. So, yeah, I just... Yeah, look me up on Twitter, and if you ever see somebody named Guthrie in a Monster Hunter game named after the great Woody G, that might be me, or it might be someone who's heard this and is now impersonating me.
Either way,
I hope you have a good time.
They must either be joined or killed swiftly.
you'll be like, are you the real Minovsky? And they'll be like, I love particles, and you're like, I can't tell. This could go either way.
I don't know. I'll say your Twitter is good for, besides just your seem cool, getting into wrestling and getting into really obscure manga that you didn't think that you would love. We all discovered Delicious in Dungeon in part because of Minovsky article.
I was on that one pretty quick, and I'm really, really happy to see that one spreading around, because I really, that can be a big plug. Delicious in Dungeon, if you're not reading it,
yes!
is one of the most fun fantasy manga, fantasy anything really, that you'll ever read. I adore that comic, and another volume is coming out I think very soon, so
exciting.
It's good shit.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I will be back.
Excellent, thank you so much for being on. Alan,
I'm on a podcast.
Plug in my phone. It's the plugs.
I'm looking like I'm in the office and they're pointing the camera at me. I'm looking to the side like, here they go. Minovsky, I'm on a TV podcast that I would love to have you on. We're talking about Twin Peaks right now, and I've been told that you're familiar with Twin Peaks.
I am familiar with Twin Peaks. Let's talk.
We'll talk.
It's too bad they made a third season. It would have been much better.
Shut up! No, it's called Chats, a television podcast. That's CHATZ colon, a television podcast. And we are nearly done with Twin Peaks The Return. We're going to be moving on to some really, really exciting stuff soon. And we're having a great time talking about cult classic TV shows over there, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. And I don't have social media plugs, even though I do have social media accounts, because I do not wish to be acknowledged or perceived.
I should tell Minovsky, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, you should know that I've technically only ever seen one episode of Twin Peaks, and it's the episode where where Earl kills the fucking roadie and puts him in a pawn piece.
The person gets stuck in a chess piece. Yeah, that's the only episode that Six has seen. I know. We try to. I don't know.
Listen, I work very hard at being a nightmare person.
You know, I love that for you.
Thank you.
Six, where can people find you on the internet?
If you really want to. I'm on Twitter at SixDetmar, SAXDETTMAR. I do a lot of podcasts and stuff. You can find those at ScanlineMedia.com or Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. What do we do for our sign-off for this one? I forget. I know what it is for Johto, but for... Carve them up. No. No.
Ew,
no. No. That's bad.
Hunt complete.
I don't love it, but I don't have any better ideas, so I guess that's it.
Bye,
peace.
Bye.
Why did I make the peace sign at my microphone like I'm a vlogger saying goodbye? Come on.